I'm Commander Shepard, and This Week in Geek is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame fest party!
Guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am one of your many hosts located in Guelph, Ontario, Canada. I am Mike the Birdman Dub, but I'm not alone as I trek through the world of geekery, stupidity, nerdity, and occasionally some weird fucking bullshit. I am joined with the man upstairs,
Mr. Christopher.
And of course, coming all the way from, actually, what is Kitchener famous for besides, like, Oktoberfest?
Strange Brew, the movie.
And really?
Yeah, it's where, well, because Oktoberfest was filmed here. other than that, they filmed that, was it 11/22/63, the Stephen King time travel assassination series was filmed here. There's a few other things. You remember that show Crossing Jordan?
Yeah.
What's her name? The star of that was from here.
Oh, well.
Oh, and the boxer Lennox Lewis, the guy that beat Mike Tyson, was from here.
Oh, well, there you go. And that is Alex, the producer, coming from Kitchener. So, yes, guys, we are back here on This Week in Geek. I have returned from the land of internet troubles, where, for those of you that don't know, last week I was out because my modem said, you have internet, you don't have internet, you have internet, you don't have internet. And it would make me go up and down, as you can imagine my aggravation with Rogers Communications was going. So what they did is they sent a guy to my house. He replaced my modem. He explained it to me. There was a software fault inside the modem, but there was also a hardware fault. So I'm like, okay. So he gave me a brand new modem, which has one less LAN cable slot. So good for me. I got less for more. But fortunately, I only have so many wired devices in my house. So my Xbox, my PC, and I think the PlayStation's wired in this house. I'm pretty sure. I used to have a whole network of computers, but since I can only use the one room, not so much anymore. Anyway, I'm back online. Connection speeds seem nice and fast. So I'm thankfully back online as Alex, my friend Kelly, Tristan told me, Mike, you get to be disconnected for a few days. Take a fucking break. My data plan would reflect otherwise to take a fucking break. I didn't. It was stressful, to say the very least. So how are you? I got that manic energy right now, if you can't tell. Holy shit.
It's good to have a bit of energy. It's good to have you back on the podcast. It's been a couple of weeks now where it's just been Alex and myself. And, well, I think we managed to do a pretty decent job of holding the fort down. It's good to be at full strength again. My last week hasn't been all that eventful, really. I helped a friend of mine move a bunch of stuff out of his house. He's moving to another city nearby. It wasn't like a full moving day, but it was take a bunch of stuff out of a house, move it into a storage locker. I've never been in a storage place before, and it was like labyrinthine. I could see myself getting lost in that place so easy. Like here I was thinking it was going to be like what you see on
Storage Wars
and shows like that, where all these outdoor units and these big like, garage-like things. It's not like that at this place. It's like a maze of smaller units on the inside, and there's street names on every row just so you kind of know where you are. And like if it wasn't just a couple of turns, if it was a little further in there, I could see myself being very scared. Thankfully, there's some music playing, because without that music, it would have been eerie as fuck. But that was my weekend. I just got my forklift license today at my job.
Exciting.
That's the second time I've got it, actually. It expired just because it only lasts for 3 years, but I got to ride around in a forklift. It's one of the favorite things I've ever done at my employer now. It doesn't feel like work. I always feel like I'm screwing around when I'm on a forklift. So maybe that's my calling. Maybe I'm in the wrong job.
And what about you, Alex? I know you've had some sickness as of late.
Well, I had the flu last week before that, something like that. And then visited family for my grandmother's 85th birthday and got a nasty head cold from my mom just from being in the proximity of her. She's evil. So to the point where, like, I'm fine during the day but cough a bit. But then when I go to bed, you know, like, I wheeze like crazy and can't sleep. And I had, like, 3 nights where I couldn't really sleep at all. And it was, like, maybe 2 hours of sleep total within maybe 72 hours or so, maybe something like that. So last night I have wicked, crazy sick person dreams, and not sick person dreams like a fever dream, more like, so, you know, lack of sleep that I just start, like, almost hallucinating. And
Jesus.
My dreams were odd. Well, I'll tell you one of them just very quickly. It involved Jeffrey the Giraffe from Toys R Us getting in a street fight with the Pokeroo.
And okay.
Yes. So basically while they're in the street fight, people start watching and, you know, they're, you know, egging people on, you go. And I still couldn't, you know, quite figure out what was going on. I was like, why are these two people fighting? Shouldn't they be friends in my dream? And then music starts playing. Now, interestingly, the music are two songs that I didn't know I'd ever heard before. That's how strange it was, because when I woke up, I immediately looked up the songs because I heard all the lyrics in my head in my dream, and they were for a song called Thunder Island and then another song called Year of the Cat. And they're from the 1970s. My parents never owned the CDs or records. I know that for a fact. I had never heard them actively, ever searched the songs out. I went through my history. Never. The only thing I could think of is I had heard these songs in the brief period between 1989 and 1991 when my dad's car only had an AM radio and all we did was listen to 1050 Chum. And I ended up looking up a little more because I was like, did 1050 Chum play music at the time, or had they already gone to being like a talk format? No, from 1987 to 1991, they were a easy listening, easy rock 70s listening station. They had gone from being top 40 to that. So literally, I dreamt about songs that I hadn't heard since I was like 2 and had never, I mean, like, never, ever heard ever again until now. So I ended up going and downloading them because I was like, well, why not? I got to listen to these. So I went on to like my Google Music and listened to it. And I was like, holy shit, these are the songs. Anyway, back to the dream. In the dream, the Pokeroo doesn't take no shit from anybody. So he pulls out one of those tiny 1950s switchblades, you know, the black handle ones that flip up, and proceeds to stab Jeffrey the Giraffe in the stomach. And then about 20 or 30 times, and he's just screaming, Pokeroo, 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 poke, 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 Pokeroo. And at the very end, when he's like, everybody's like, stop it, he's already done, leave him alone. The Pokeroo goes, Pokeroo, and then stabs him right in the stomach and lifts with his hand and basically, like,
Mortal Kombat's him.
Basically slices all the way up the long giraffe neck and, like, degloves the neck. And then all this, like, blood sprays out. And then I woke up and I was like, I got to find out those songs. Those are my dreams.
That's what you took from it.
Yes.
That's what it occurs to me that many of our listeners might not know what a Pokeroo is. It was invented by TV Ontario, so it's kind of a local thing. But it sort of resembles a cross between a kangaroo and a giraffe. It's a green plush costume with a polka dot attire on it. It's really hard to explain. You'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
But
and he runs from people.
And all he says is Pokeroo. So that does fit the description, having him screaming Pokeroo while he's brutally murdering the giraffe.
I will put in the description of the show two little pictures side by side of Jeffrey the Giraffe from Toys R Us and Pokeroo. So now we know why Toys R Us died. It's because the Pokeroo fucked him up real bad.
Well, on that note, we have an exciting Twig show for you this week. We have reviews coming to us from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. We'll be taking a look at Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald. We'll also be taking an extended look at Ubisoft's The Division 2, which came out recently. And finally, from Paramount Home Entertainment, we'll be taking a look at the re-release of Pet Sematary on Blu-ray. And of course, we'll have the usual news roundup, weird stuff, including why Garfield phones have been washing upon the shores of France for the last 35 years, and many, many other stories. So we'll be back right here on Twig, your flagship of stupidity. We'll be right back right after this. Today we are looking at Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. This is the sequel to the previous Fantastic Beasts movie, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Once again, we find our heroes Newt and his buddies Jacob Kowalski, Queenie, and Tina in a whole mess of trouble as they basically search for the dark wizard Grindelwald. And basically, he's raising an army not unlike Voldemort and the Death Eaters, except he's trying to band together magic users to fight humanity because he sees there's a war coming. Sooner or later, you're going to have to pick a side, and it's not going to work out too well for the wizards, considering us normal non-magi or muggles outnumber them a significant number. And you do see returning characters such as Credence, who's the big deal in this, again. You also see a lot of Easter eggs connecting this to the Harry Potter franchise, the original Harry Potter. You see a Philosopher's Stone, Nagini makes an appearance. I'm not going to reveal too much about that if you know what I'm talking about, though. And you do see young Dumbledore, played by Jude Law, who I think is a fantastic casting choice for this movie. However, the movie itself, I like it better than I like the first movie. I found this one a lot easier to follow. It was a lot better pace. Although, looking at the reviews on Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes, their reviews were also mixed. And that's where I'm going to put this one. It's very much a mixed bag. It's a lot better than the first. I'll say that one. And I'll fight anyone who disagrees with me otherwise. However, though, is this movie worth owning? That's where it gets debatable. It's definitely worth seeing where the story goes, as now we're seeing kind of a Harry Potter period piece, and it does set up the events that will take place later on. But I wonder where the whole Grindelwald story is going to pan out since the big reveal at the end. I'll just say, ooh, what a twist. For the Blu-ray itself, though, there's not a lot to it. There are some special features. There's one where they talk about how J.K. Rowling created the world and whatnot, and the typical fluff pieces. There's some deleted scenes as well. The one that kind of stood out to me, and I kind of wish we got a little bit more from, is where they had Credence and Luna Lovegood wax poetic on being in the movies themselves and being Harry Potter fans. And I don't know, I kind of expected that to be a little bit different. I'm not quite sure what I expected, but I thought I'd get a little bit more in depth from them than saying, ooh, dude, do you think this is cool? I thought this was cool. Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald as a Blu-ray, I think it's worth a rent at best, or maybe on video on demand. If you want to get this particular movie and you want to own it, I'm going to say wait until there's a multiple pack that comes out, when there's, like, say, a two-pack, or when the franchise is finally complete, or if you see this on deep discount. Otherwise, right now, I can't recommend picking this movie up at full price. I just don't think it does enough value for your dollar. And that's my review from us here at This Week in Geek. Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service. For only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, you can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
Welcome back to Twig, your flagship stupidity. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Daw, joined with Mr. Christopher and Alex, the producer from Kitchener, Ontario. And of course, it is time to talk about the news that is, that was, and forever shall be etched into the walls of history. And we're going to start things off on a rather serious note this week, because as you guys know, swatting, if you don't know, is in is a practice in which one douchebag calls the SWAT team or the police on another person and potentially gets them in trouble. More often than not, the police respond. They crash the guy's apartment or house, typically resulting in some property damage. However, occasionally, sometimes people do get hurt, and rarely they get killed. One such swatter was a guy named Tyler Barris, who was sentenced to 20 years in prison this week by a U.S. district court for placing fake 911 calls, which back in 2017 resulted in the death of a man from Wichita, Kansas, over a bet worth a total of, excuse me, $1.50.
Morty.
I'm going to read this pretty much line for line from Engadget. After being given an address by the gamer he was in an argument with, Shane Caskill, Barris called the Wichita Police Department posing as his rival. He told the dispatcher that he murdered his father and was holding the rest of the family hostage. A SWAT team showed up at the address provided to him by Caskill, which was actually the residence of 28-year-old Andrew Finch. The officer involved in the fatal shooting wasn't criminally charged, though Finch's family has since sued the city over the incident. Barris, now 26, was arrested shortly after the fatal shooting and pled guilty to 51 total charges late last year, stemming primarily from numerous false reports he made to emergency services. He was found to have committed, he was also found to have placed bomb threats to the Dallas Convention Center, a Florida high school, and the Federal Communications Commission during the agency's vote to repeal net neutrality.
So what you're saying is he's a giant asshole.
Yeah, fuck this guy. 20 years and he got a guy killed over $1.50.
Let's not downplay the cop that actually shot the guy as well. Like, there was no criminal charge for the cop that actually fatally shot somebody, but the whole situation is just fucked up. Like, why would you do that to anyone for any reason? Like, I know tempers run hot in a lot of games like Call of Duty, but to call 911 to get a SWAT team to come down to someone else's residence because you're mad about a $1.50 bet in a video game? Come the fuck on.
Yeah, like, seriously. And just, like, I I'm sure the cop was doing his job and everything, and I'm sure there's circumstances we don't know about, obviously not to downplay his role, as you said. But the fact that this guy would go through the effort to essentially murder someone over this, like, it blows my mind. And this is the culture we now live in. Swatting and doxing is a very real possibility for a lot of online personalities. I know there are people I read about regularly on Twitter. If they're not swatted, they get doxed, and they'll have people randomly show up at their house. In fact, there was one streamer I read about recently who had a person who was interested in them romantically show up at their door at 2 o'clock in the morning, expecting to have a place to stay. It's online world is remarkably fucking dangerous now.
It's a combination of a few things. It's one, you get people that are short-sighted and they think, oh, this will be funny for the lulz, which, you know, I'm saying in quotes. And they don't think that the worst could happen. They just think, oh, they're going to get a big scare. Or there's the cases where people do it because they want to hurt them because they're so socially awkward and don't understand how society works that the human life doesn't mean anything to them. And that is indicative of, you know, mental illness, and as well as the situations where you have people that don't ever communicate with anybody. They do everything online. They might not even do grocery shopping, you know, except for delivery services. And they don't have to have any communication with people in real life. So they don't have the tangible feelings and empathy towards people. So they just do it because they think, oh, fuck them.
I mean, swatting is an incident we hear usually a few times per year. Usually at the worst, someone's door gets kicked in. I know last year, streamer Dr. Disrespect had his house fucking shot at. And I've heard of other people getting stuff in the mail. A personal friend of mine and the show, recently threats were made against them that their apartment was going to get doxed because they're part of a rather large online movement, and I'm not going to mention what it is. I don't want to draw any more attention to them.
Well,
but it's dangerous out there. It's scary.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, but notice something though. 90% of this happens in the States. So
some of I've heard of it happening in Canada. Yeah.
But it is fairly rare. You've got to look at, I don't know if it's an education thing. I don't know if it's something has happened in the States where it's mostly a newer generation. People born, let's say like 1985 or later is the vast majority of these people doing the doxing. And the vast majority are actually people probably born in the late 90s. I don't know if it has something to do, like you could argue, oh, it's systemic because of people staring at their screens all day, but it seems to be mostly localized to the States, as in like probably about 90%. I'm just throwing a number out there, happened there. And then you hear the odd thing happening in like Australia or Germany or somewhere else. But the vast majority is American. I don't know why that is.
It's something about the American culture, and specifically, it's almost like the culture in America online specifically is different than other places. I know we talked about this a few weeks ago. You were talking about how online culture in, say, a country like Germany is different compared to America. So I don't know, man. I'm glad this guy got 20 years. I'm sure he deserves a lot more. But in the words of this show, and you can quote me on this, fuck him.
Yeah, he probably got that. They're throwing the book at him to be like trying to prevent further people from doing it. Be like, hey, here's the precedent. Mm-hmm. If you dox somebody, you'll get 20 years in prison. Or, you know, if you SWAT somebody and they die, you're going to get life.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, it's endangerment causing death. Like there's a pretty significant crime being committed. It's not just a prank. Somebody's getting killed because of your actions. Like, yes, the cop has a significant role to play in it as well. The person who pulls the trigger should be held responsible in addition to it. But the reason they're there is because they've heard a report that there's an armed person in this household. So they need to protect themselves as well. So I can kind of see why something like that would turn out that way, why they'd be a little bit itchy with their trigger finger.
Yeah.
They're expecting to go into a situation where it's life or death. And when they reach that person and a sudden movement happens, they're going to be in a situation where they have to make a split second decision that might cost them their own life. So
yeah.
The whole situation is perpetrated by this person who's putting in this fake phone call. So that's where the majority of the responsibility lies. So throw the book at him, throw him in jail for as long as we can.
I've actually been in a situation where a SWAT team was called onto a neighbor and no idea they were even there because they're silent when they roll up. And I've had the guns pointed at me before, and it's terrifying. And I'm just glad that our cops are really good. Because
I've had my address out there publicly, and I'm surprised. No, the worst I've ever had happen to me is someone sent me a dildo and told me to go fuck myself. That's the worst that's ever happened to me.
Did you?
Yeah, that happened about...
No, I mean, did you?
Did I go fuck myself? No. No, I did not.
Did you keep the dildo and, like, adorn it with googly eyes and stuff and mount it on, like, some sort of mantle?
We left it in our last apartment under the sink. And just like, yep, well... There's a surprise when they clean this place out. But yeah, that's about the work. And that was when I was working with another organization, and the fans were pretty good. But now fandom and being a personality can go. You're either loved or you're hated. There is no middle ground anymore.
You need to be in a position and a mindset that you understand that there's shitty people out there and there's going to be haters. If you're popular, that means you have your community, but part of your community, a very small part, but a very loud and active part, is going to be trolling. They're going to do things that are going to upset people. That's what they get off on. They want to be an asshole because they enjoy being an asshole. So you need to accept that those people exist and figure out how to deal with them.
Yeah. Like, for example, now I won't give out my address to anybody that I don't trust because of stuff like this, because you never know. Anyway, moving on to our next story, which is also equally sunshiny and good newsy. A few weeks ago, there was a number of airline crashes that grounded a significant number of specific airliners. Well, I'm going to read this story from Ars Technica. The crash Lion Air 737 MAX and the Ethiopian Airlines 73 MAX aircraft had more in common than aircraft design and an apparently malfunctioning flight system that led to their demises. Both of the planes lacked optional safety features that would have alerted the pilots to the problems with their angle of attack sensors. This input suspected of causing maneuvering characteristics augmentation system software to put the aircraft into a fatal dive. The New York Times has reported that both vehicles lacked an AOA disagree light, a warning light that indicates when the two aircraft's AOA sensors provide different readings and an angle of attack indicator. Since the MCAS system relied only on one of the aircraft's AOA sensors, the disagree light and AOA indicator would have given the flight crew visible evidence of a sensor failure and prompted them to disable MCAS. But both of these features sold by the Boeing as expensive add-ons, and many discount and smaller airlines declined to purchase them as they are not required by regulators. That is scary as shit. A safety feature that's quote-unquote optional would have saved these two flights from the catastrophic crashes that killed a whole lot of people. It's scary.
It is scary. It's technology kind of superseding human judgment. Like I give a lot of respect to pilots. They do a job that I would be terrified to do. I don't like flying. I'm not afraid of it. I just don't enjoy it. The amount of pressure that's on pilots is pretty immense, and technology is there to help them. But the fact that some software being written without a single type of redundancy would make the difference between living and dying for a whole bunch of people is terrifying. You'd think there'd be so many more systems in place, but then you don't know something's a problem until it's a problem with a lot of this stuff. You don't think about it happening.
It's so strange, too, because this system, this light disagreeing system, is an optional add-on, but it's something that's fundamental. Like, you're getting two different readings from your angle of attack sensors, which determines the angle in which the aircraft is flying. If I'm interpreting this right, that should be a pretty fucking basic thing. You're getting wrong readings. Maybe we shouldn't trust it. Let's disable this shit. Not, oh, hey, it's another 750,000. I'm just throwing that number out there to buy this optional add-on. No, that should be mandatory. If your sensors are giving you false positives, you should be able to know about that right away.
All of another reason to, you know, never have paid DLC. It should always be included in the game or in the the plane for that matter. Or if it's something that pertains to critical safety, it should be a free update that's pushed automatically.
Yeah, like this is...
And my understanding is that they are updating the software for all future models and all future flights and whatever is currently in use, although most 737s are now permanently grounded because of this.
They have to now, because if they don't, then they will be held. Like, it's very rare that a corporation is held and then, like, the CEO and the board of directors are held criminally liable for deaths. But if they, you know, all these deaths were caused because of this, and then they choose not to, you know, give it away for free now, then they could be seen as liable, and then it could, you know, not only crash their entire company, but you talk about death threats. Imagine what would happen to these people.
Oh God, yeah. Like there's over 100 people dead with this, and I wonder what's going to happen. Like, as you brought up, who will be held criminally liable? The lawsuits that will inevitably come out of this. And I remember this causing traffic chaos. Like, I remember just seeing people saying, yeah, I'm stuck in Iceland now. I'm stuck in wherever. I can't get home now. Obviously, these flights being grounded for a very good reason. I don't know. Just with the amount of safety that goes into flying, I'm surprised this happened. I genuinely am surprised because I love flying. I've flown probably like 6-7 times now. Never had a problem on any of my flights. Never even considered that something like this could be a problem. I just assumed flying is safer than driving or taking a train or doing whatever. I've always been told that, quote unquote, that universal truth that flying is safe, the safest way to go. And if something does happen, it's God's will, basically.
A lot of what it is by the numbers, it is safer to fly than any other method because there are fewer plane accidents than there are car accidents and train problems and other methods of transportation. The problem is when something happens on a plane, everybody's dead. It's such a severe incident because you're 30,000 feet in the air. While on the ground, if it's a minor accident, then everybody's fine. But there's a lot of major accidents in cars, so you get it into a matter of numbers rather than looking at the severity of the individual incidences.
Mm-hmm. So obviously our hearts go out to all those affected. Hopefully this will lead to some drastic changes in the aviation industry, and hopefully safety standards pretty much across the world will be brought up and Boeing takes full responsibility and does the right thing and does whatever it can to make sure that flying is the safest way to travel. So moving on to our next news story. This one is more affects people in Britain, but it will, or Britain and European countries, but I'm sure this will spread over here as well sooner as opposed to later. So Article 13, if you don't know, it's called the Copyright Directive that makes platforms like Google, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube liable for whatever content is uploaded to these platforms by their users. So basically, people should get paid for their work. If you take a clip of, say, Goodfellas, and you use it in a, I don't know, a review or something, somebody should be getting paid. But there's also the fair use argument. That's over here in North America, more specifically the U.S., Canada. I don't really know what our fair use copyright laws are.
We don't have any.
There's a, there's not really a fair
use. We don't really have an official one.
It's with North America, there's a lot of things about transformative work and using source material and modifying it in a way that makes it not the original, and what you can do and what you can't do. It's such a complicated area of law that it's impossible to get into in a single podcast. It's not about copyright law.
Yeah, this one, it seems like the companies, like I said, like Google, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, etc., would have to be liable for whatever their users upload. And that means they'd have to scrub anything that crosses that particular line. So letters that were put out to from YouTube and Twitch that took aim at Article 13, and I quote, could be forced to impose filters and monitor measures on all works uploaded by residents of the EU, which would require streamers to provide copyright ownership information, clearances, and take other steps to provide that you comply with thorny and very complicated copyright laws. The company also warned that streamers will very likely have to contend with false positives associated with such measures, as it would also limit what content we can make available to viewers in the EU. In other words, if you're streaming in the US, you could lose European viewers thanks to Article 13. This could
really
be catastrophically
everybody.
Bad. Yes, this fucks a lot of people.
Platforms like Twitch are very largely based on material that does have copyright involved. The large majority of Twitch streams are about video game content, and obviously anything that's a video game was created by people and has some copyrights around it. What people do is take that basic material and build on it by commenting on it or talking with their community while they're playing it, so it's on in the background. But this kind of thing will force Twitch or YouTube or any other platform that you are streaming on or making videos for to pay royalties or filter it out entirely. So you could end up with the inability to stream any of this content. So it just shuts Twitch right down completely unless they want to basically pay a bunch of money out in order to have the license to stream the content, which I don't think they want to do.
Yeah, I see this being catastrophic for content creators in the EU. Like I was using the example of creating a review for a movie like, say, Goodfellas. Well, you're going to have to use clips, or you can, I guess if you wanted to get around it, you could use stills. But even then, you're going to get dinged by YouTube's copyright system. And unless you're sitting there in front of, like, I don't know, a nice bookshelf or something, your review is going to be boring and lacking a lot of B-roll and footage.
No, it's gonna. I'll tell you what's gonna happen, and just knowing how a lot of businesses you know, do stuff in the back end. They're going to make it so that when you post a video, you know, when you're putting your, you're uploading the file, you'll have to have a, you'll have a drop down list or a search bar where you have to search for every related clip that you put in your video. So it'll be like, let's say you've got a clip from Goodfellas and then you've got a clip from something else. And here's another thing. And you're talking about using it in relation to talk about Casino, the movie. Mm-hmm. You'll have to search all those video terms and make sure that they are listed in YouTube or Twitch's verified list of properties that the movie studios will allow you to use, or you'll have to basically claim every little individual clip and say, hey, here's how short the clip is. It's just going to make posting a lot longer. And as far as Twitch streaming goes, it'll be something where you can't just stream any game you want. You'll go, I'm going to stream this game. And before it lets you actually do it, let's say like when you do it on the Xbox, it can detect what game you're streaming automatically. It'll just go, this game's not approved. You can't stream this game. Or it'll go, you know, this one.
Viewing is restricted in XYZ.
Yeah, just it'll be like, note, in the EU, all music will be stripped from this video. Like, they'll let you know ahead of time that the algorithms are good enough to do that. They just have to implement them.
It makes me sad for certain streamers who do. There's a certain stream that's called IRL, so in real life, and they play music under, and they use it to hold community events or hold chat events. So they'll have to, their days of streaming music are done, essentially, because they won't be able to upload clips if they contain copyrighted music, which does make sense to me.
There's already a lot of Twitch filters for that. There's already a lot of limitations you can do with music on Twitch. Any sort of VODs, mm-hmm. if it contains copyrighted music, will just mute it completely. So videos on demand aren't something that you can go back and watch with sound if you already have music in there. But clipping will then become a problem as well. A lot of clips are actually done by community members, not by the actual streamer themselves. So now this puts those people at a disadvantage as well. They won't be able to properly clip this stuff because it might contravene with Article 13.
Now, if this stops the old, you know, that guy with the glasses style videos from being made, I'm completely fine with that. I'm so tired of videos where all they are is Family Guy clips over and over again, you know, where it's cutaway after cutaway after cutaway after cutaway. That's just lazy joke telling. That's lazy reviewing. So if it's going to cut away a lot of that, especially the lower quality reviews from people like that, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. The fact that this only passed in Parliament by like 5 votes means I don't think a lot of people understand it or the implications this is going to have. I mean, obviously this is a story to keep an eye on, as I think these companies have like a couple of years to implement systems. Because this
The actual law doesn't go into effect until 2021, so there's still time for this to change. There's time for this to iterate on itself, but time's not that much in our favor here for content creators.
Exactly. So we guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with Article 13 as time moves forward. Moving on to our next story, this one is actually happy, I would argue. And this one comes just from Alex, and this one makes me really happy. As you guys know, there's going to be a remake of Child's Play coming out on the 21st of June this year, and not a lot about the movie is currently known. We know that Chucky is now going to be a killer robot in the movie, not a child killer, or not a child killer, not a killer played by Brad Dourif, which is the first time Brad Dourif will not be voicing Chucky in the reboot, though they did ask him to participate in some capacity, but he said no, along with Don Mancini, I think was the producer from it, if I remember correctly. Probably got a name wrong there, but anyway. The important part to take away from this thing is the new voice of Chucky has been revealed. And this makes me have hope for it, providing he gets the right lines to say as the character himself. Mark Hamill, a.k.a. the voice of the Joker and Luke Skywalker himself, is going to play Chucky. My interest in this movie just jumped way the hell up.
As long as he doesn't just sound like the Joker, he's got to I know he's a tremendously talented voice actor. He's one of my favorite voice actors, one of my favorite actors of all time. So awesome. But I hope he brings his unique style, but also has it be a new character, something that he's not done before. But my interest in this is definitely hitting a new high. I was never too much of a fan of the original Child's Play. I like it, but it was not one of my favorite movies. But now I can definitely see me going to the theater to watch this.
I've never seen any of them.
Really? I'm actually surprised.
Like, I've seen bits and pieces, little clips here and there, and I'm like, that's about it. I'm just hoping if he does a voice that, you know, from the past, he does Cock Knocker. Exactly.
Oh, this will be interesting to see what happens with it.
Yeah, I can see it being just, you can definitely tell that it's Mark Hamill. While his voices are amazing, you can always tell that it's Mark Hamill. He just has that kind of grit in his voice, and I can really see that grit kind of coming out in Chucky. The character that's gonna have that kind of rough, like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah.
The thing that worries me about it, though, is Chucky and Brad Dourif, who played the original, had created a very distinctive character with the voice, and specifically Chucky's laugh. That, as long as Mark Hamill doesn't do a Joker ripoff with it, he'll make that character his own, which I think this will be fantastic. I think having Hamill involved is enough to get more people interested in this, because the buzz for this movie, I think, has been fairly eh. But yeah, Now that we got Mark Hamill involved, I think you're going to get a lot more genre fans and people that may not necessarily have seen this originally interested. So I think this is a pretty good casting choice.
A lot less people will be up in arms over this than, let's say, if they did a Crypt Keeper movie and they replaced that voice. That would be,
yeah,
like John Cassier. If he changed his, it would be even worse because he's more iconic. I feel like the Chucky movies, like, as popular as they are, they're not quite mainstream. Like, the image of the doll is, but you can talk to very many people that have never actually seen one of the movies. They've only heard of it or seen the art or posters.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that, you're right, people are familiar with but not necessarily know. Kind of like people have, like, in sort of the icons of horror, there's Jason, there's Freddy, and Chucky. Those are the three icons of the genre, and Michael Myers, and maybe even the Scream guy, you could make a pretty good argument for.
And Pinhead is probably the last one.
Mm-hmm. So he's the last of the newer slasher villains, because the first Child's Play came out, and I want to say 1988 or 1989. It was one or the other. Terrified me as a child. But anyway, this is good news. So we'll wait and see what happens. So anyway, guys, we're going to take a break here on This Week in Geek, and we're going to give you our extended review of Ubisoft's The Division 2 on the Xbox One and PC, and give you our thoughts on it from the three of us. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
We used to be ordinary people with ordinary lives. The big guns. Trained in secret. Only to be activated if the worst happened. 7 months ago, that day came.
We are taking a look today at The Division 2, brought to us by Ubisoft. A review code was provided for us on Xbox One, and we did take a look at the PC version as well. The Division 2 is a game that me, Tristan, and Alex both have multiple days in playing. In fact, this is probably the game I've played the most in the last little while. I've logged over 22 hours with it so far and still am playing it. Alex, you're at what, 19 or 20?
Yeah, about 19 or 20 hours, and to give a little background, I have over 100 hours in the first game.
And then, Tristan, you blew past us in terms of this.
Yes, apparently I'm sitting at 47 hours of playtime, which is not as much as I thought, because I've spent quite a few nights just kind of deep diving into it. I reached the end game, I've got myself up to pretty much as high of a gear score as I can right now. There's more content coming out on Friday, which will further increase the gear score cap, so there's more to do coming up soon. So this is why I'm kind of not playing it as we speak, because I've already hit what I need to hit now, But I'll go into that a little later as to why I'm going to pause.
Play my character. I want to be super powerful. So the Division 2. So for those of you that don't know, it's a sequel to the first Division. Takes place about 7 or 8 months after the first game. Except whereas you are in a snow-filled New York, you're in a rather springtime, summer-ish Washington, D.C., which Ubisoft has taken tremendous lengths to recreate. In fact, if you know your way around D.C., you'll have an advantage in this game. I kind of knew somewhat where I was going after going to MAGFest for a couple of years, and I actually went down to President Obama's inauguration back in 2008. I went down to the presidential mall and everything. So I'm like, I kind of know where I'm going. I am not as high level as I should be to be here. Shit! The storyline basically is, Tristan, maybe you can more succinctly put this than my experience with the storyline. What is the storyline of the Division 2?
So the original Division saw the green poison or the dollar flu go around and kill a whole bunch of people because it was a very powerful virus that people didn't have any immunity to and spread like wildfire and killed off a large amount of the population. And a similar thing has happened in Washington, D.C. The green poison has killed a lot of people and caused the collapse of society, essentially. There's the survival of the fittest. There's a few pockets of civilization still going strong, but they're huddled up in settlements. They've turned a theater into a little settlement where people can live safely, but they're not exactly living well. Gotta be totally honest, the plot isn't really all that deep or twisting and turning, not even to the degree that the first Division was. So it's really hard to wrap around what's going on. It doesn't seem all that important. It just seems like I am an agent in Washington, D.C. I am here to shoot bad guys and become stronger, and I don't care why. It's there's not enough reason put into the story as to why I should care. There's not enough character development. There's a lot of overdramatic acting, but it doesn't really give a lot of development to those characters. So I find it really hard to understand what's actually going on.
Yeah,
each individual mission, kind of cool. Gives you a framework for what's going on as to why you should care a little bit in that moment. But the overarching story is really not much there.
Which is kind of unfortunate because I was kind of hoping the Division 2 would suck me in into its narrative, because I think the world of the Division is tremendously interesting because it does have the Tom Clancy license associated with it. It's built on realism. It's built on real life events, real world places and stuff that could potentially happen. But that's not to say this game is bad. In fact, I had a tremendously good time with this game. Mechanics. This is a looter shooter. You could compare this to Destiny. You could compare it to Anthem and games like that. Although, because you're dealing with a little bit more real world stuff, there's no jumping and flying around. You can roll and you can hide behind cover. In fact, one of the cool mechanics I like in this game is to go cover to cover, where you just hold the like A button, and if you look at a piece of cover, you can dash towards it, kind of hunching yourself to the ground, kind of like the roadie run from Gears of War. You'll take a little bit less damage. You can also reload while you're doing that too. And I found the gunplay in this to be tremendously fun.
It's very much a cover-based shooter, and it's not the cover-based as in you're always hiding behind a piece of cover because that's the only way to survive. The whole game is built around you being in different kinds of cover. It's not just chest-high walls. You're hiding around corners, you're hiding behind posts and behind cars and around cars. You're using the terrain, you're using the environment to your advantage to gain a better angle than your opponents have. And your opponents are actually trying to do the same to you. The AI is phenomenal in this game.
Yeah, the enemy this game is very smart. Hard.
It's if you don't reposition yourself in a timely manner, they're going to flank you. They're going to come around behind you, or something's going to spawn out of a door that you didn't see behind you, and you're going to end up getting shot from behind because you're not paying enough attention to the environment around you. But the gunplay itself is really fun. It there's a lot of different types of guns. There's a lot of different styles you can play. While everything's still based around cover, how you play around that depends on what type of character you want to play. If you don't want to be a sniper, you can be a sniper. There's sniper rifles, of course. There's weapons that are good for range that aren't sniper rifles. Assault rifles are good at mid-range. LMGs are good at a mid-range as well for laying down cover fire. There's SMGs if you want to get up close. There's shotguns. Shotguns are actually improved quite a bit over the first division, where they're actually much more viable now. They do a tremendous amount of damage as long as you have a little bit of aim and some positional awareness, because getting up close is dangerous. Like I said, the enemies are flanking. They're very smart, and they will kick the crap out of you if you're not
They're aggressive
attention.
In this game.
Very aggressive.
Compared
to the first game, I found that the AI is much more aggressive in this game as well. As you were saying, they've done some tweaking and tooling on the weapons and combat front. If you played the first game, the controls are basically identical. They've just really done a lot of tweaking in the environmental design and the AI.
One of the things
that's
that
what
I've
feel what it comes down to. Sorry, I just cut you off.
Oh, no, I was about to say, I'm definitely in agreement with you. One thing I've noticed about this AI is your tactics, they'll work for a while, and then the enemy gets smart. I've had enemies cut me off. I've had them come up behind me. I've had them, it's like they know when I'm reloading, and they'll rush me specifically with their close quarters people, with those stupid melee ones. I can't stand those ones. They
behave differently too. A lot of those ones that run up in melee, they don't just dash at you and just try to suicide themselves on you. No, they often take a hit of some kind of special drug that gives them a whole lot of extra vitality, so you have to mow them down with a lot more ammo than it would have taken normally. So that's one of the designs that they've put into this game, is making it so enemies do take some amount of bullets to take down, but there's usually a reason. Instead of them just being bullet sponges, they're armored, for example, or they have, like I said, that vitality drug that they take that makes them a little bit more tanky. So you don't feel like they're just absorbing bullets because you've turned the difficulty to a certain setting. No, they have a reason for that bullet sponginess, so it doesn't feel bad like it did in the first division.
One of the things I'm also liking about this, too, is it seems accessible. Like, with my gear, I know you had to get mods and accessories. You could get those from weapons. Here, you can craft them in your perk system. And I like how if you now craft an 8x scope, or if you complete a project in one of the settlements, as long as you craft it, every gun that can take it now has that option. So it makes weapon customization really, really, really viable. And you can then combine those with different talents. You can do something later in the game called recalibration. I think I said that right.
Recalibration.
Recalibration, yes, where you can mix and match traits from different pieces of armor and weapons. Like to say, this now has a faster reload, but it might now have this bonus, or this will stack health bonuses if you have this on it. And it's an in-depth system that does take a while to learn, but if you're willing to take the time to optimize your builds, there is some fantastic depth here and some real tactical depth too.
Yeah,
it's really worth noting. Sorry, Alex, but before we move on to anything else, the mods, especially weapon mods, I want to point out that in the first division, mods are pretty much essential because it would make your gun more powerful. No matter what, if you didn't have a mod, your gun was underpowered. If you did have a mod, your gun was where you needed it to be. In Division 2, mods literally just modify. There is something that it'll improve and something it'll take away in exchange for that. It might increase your reload speed, but decrease how many bullets you have in that clip or magazine. Sorry, it's not a clip. It might make it so you do more damage at range, but it might reduce how accurate you are at range at the same time. So there's a give and a take. So it lets you customize it, but it doesn't give you just more power. It makes it so you need to select what you want to focus on, what you want to specialize in. So that's just one more layer of depth to the customization in this game that does so well.
It's funny. You're always going to say basically the same thing. I guess great minds. Now, do you want my things I don't like about the game first?
Yes.
Or things I do? Yeah, we'll go with that first. What I don't like about the game is if you are a new player, there's not enough hand-holding. And I never thought I'd say that about a game because too many games have, you know, like 3 hours of tutorials before you can actually continue. But this game doesn't explain enough to you. Like, for instance, if I didn't play the first game, I wouldn't have known that you press the select button to bring up the map for the city. Literally, like, something as simple as that isn't told to you. As well as the game is incredibly dark, not in tone, but in visuals. Like, at nighttime, you can't see anything. And I have a really good TV where I can change the brightness settings on it and everything. And it's I don't think it's like a stylistic choice. It's just there's no flashlights. There's no, like, the first game, even when it was dark, you were still able to at least make out what was going on. And I find playing this game, if it's like a nighttime or, you know, inside a building or underground, I just find I don't even want to do it unless it's, you know, enough light in there, because I find that it doesn't add to my experience.
It does get bad enough that you can get stuck if you end up accidentally shooting out some lights in your underground, because it gets so dark that you can no longer find the exit. And I've had that happen to me. I had to fast travel out of the mission I was doing because I could not find my way to the next objective.
That exactly. And the other thing is, in putting so much more detail into the levels, like, there's like junk and debris everywhere in this game. The one thing that they've done is it's become difficult to navigate your safe houses and your I guess your base of operations. There's the maps don't really help you. Every one of them is very labyrinthine and difficult to navigate. It can be hard to find where you need to go. Same with, like, you know, I'm playing in 4K. I've actually turned the text up to largest size, high contrast on, all this stuff. And, you know, I even moved my chair closer, so I'm sitting like 4 feet away from, you know, my 55-inch screen. And I should not be having a difficult time navigating. You know, when you put a place marker and it has the orange arrow of where you need to go? It's so thin. It's like one pixel wide. You can barely see where you have to go half the time. Whereas that wasn't an issue in the first game.
And there's a lot of things and features in places like the base of operations that you can't necessarily mark as your current where you want to go, but you might need to visit it. There's a clan stash that you can visit, I think, once per week that'll give you some gear depending on how your clan has performed over that time. And I didn't know it was there until yesterday. But finding it is going from the front of the base of operations. You walk in, you walk past the vendor, you go down the right hallway all the way down until you find the last door on the left, and you go in through there, and then you turn right, I think, and then another left, and then it's at the back of the room, kind of blending into the wall a little bit. And
see, that should not be something. No. You know, in a modern game where everything else seems to be well thought put together and thought through, it seems like this aspect, navigation, has been like the last thing on their minds.
Yeah, navigation of a lot of things, really. Like the base of operations and the settlements, they're, like you said, labyrinthine. They're hard to find where you need to go. If there's missions, oh, check out the new game area in the theater. Where? I don't know where that is. And it mentioned once, and then you didn't show me where it is, so I don't know where it is, and I don't know what it's for. But then the actual navigation for combat and finding your way from one mission to the next can be a little buggy at times, I find. That little one pixel orange line tends to take you on a circuitous route that doesn't make any sense. When you could just cut across the park and you're right there, it tells you to travel for 300 meters around in a circle.
Yeah. And it's also impossible to see during daylight. It's easier to see at night.
Yeah, and the surprising thing is this was not an issue in the first game. Again, you know, I was end game. I had a clan. You know, we were doing all the sieges, and I was so good in that game that I could do the storied, the main missions of the game. I could solo them on hard, like, on my own. And I could do it over and over and over again. That's how good I got. And I never had an issue trying to find where I needed to go in that game. And I'm finding it pretty much left, right, and center in this game. That's my biggest gripe with it. But that's pretty much it. Like, as far as stuff that I like, pretty much everything else has been an upgrade. The visuals are an upgrade. This is closer in graphics to what we saw in the original Division's E3 trailer, where it was all that fake video footage. but this is actually pretty close to that visual style that they were going for there. It's also, the soundtrack is good when it does pick in. Like, a lot of it is, you know, fairly silent, and then it becomes bombastic and crazy as things are happening, basically. It's one of those adaptive soundtracks that the more action that happens, the louder it gets, sort of thing, which I like in games now. The voice acting is pretty much, you know, on par with the first game, meaning it's good. The controls are tight and concise. I find that aiming is actually maybe a little better in this game, so they've tweaked it and made it so that it's a little, I guess, more intuitive. The only other thing I can say is I'm not a big fan of their cosmetic loot box system in this. Like, I know loot boxes are in everything now, but interestingly enough, when you get one of your boxes, they don't tell you in the game how to open them.
Yeah, I couldn't navigate my way to that for a long time.
It's like, how do I, I got pre-order DLC with it. Like, part of when they provided the code was, it came with some, a few boxes that you could open. Well, there's no instructions on how to do that. And you find out it's like in the menu, you got to go to, it's like three or four steps just to get to it. And for a game that is trying to sell you a lot of costumes and cosmetics, it shouldn't be that difficult to find where to use them and open them.
If I had a complaint about this game, it comes to difficulty, because I played a majority of my time in this solo. I did team up with Alex at one point to try a couple of control points, and soloing this game is hard. One thing that I've noticed in this, and even when I teamed up with Alex, it seemed like enemies were a bit more bullet spongy.
Well, we found
than I had anticipated.
It might have been a glitch. It might have been that your instance was glitched, because when the one control point that I did it on my own in like 2 minutes, and then I joined you to do the same one in yours, and the enemies are like not like twice as hard. We're talking 10 times as hard, like 5 times the amount of enemies. They all have RC cars that explode. We're getting one shot killed from snipers. It made no sense to me why it was that difficult. I don't know if, exiting and reloading the game would have changed it, but it does.
I believe
seem
it was
like
a bug.
It was a bug.
I believe I've heard it is a bug where if you join someone who's a lower level, then it would do some weird things with the enemy scaling and cause problems with getting one shot or just suddenly dropping out of nowhere. So they've fixed that since then. So I'm not sure if that'd be better in that situation.
Because I was like 2 levels lower than him, but what it felt like was instead of going, hey, we're going to increase the level to 1 level higher than normal, which is sort of what they would do previously, it felt like they added our levels together.
Yeah, like it was a lot more difficult. Now, eventually I did finish that control point, and believe me, there was much cheering and swearing when that happened. But that's about the only complaint I really had on this. Other than that, it seems like a lot of the loot I'm getting is, I want more guns. And loot is not by your instance. Basically, me and Alex had to share loot. I didn't like that.
See, that's not what I've seen, what I've noticed. I've had gear drop for me that no one else can see. I can share with them, but everyone gets their own loot.
Oh, okay.
So that might be a bug as well.
Well, yeah. I think our instance was bugged because he was having stuff drop that I couldn't see.
Okay,
and vice versa. Whereas I did team up with a bunch of rando players, and we were all getting the same stuff. So I do think there's a couple little glitches that they need to work out, which again surprises me, seeing as it's based on the previous engine of the first game, which didn't have that issue. So bugs pop up wherever and whenever they can.
This seems like more like the Division 1.5 as opposed to the Division 2.
It does kind of at the moment here. Like I'm not. Here's the thing. I really, bottom line, I like the game. And I'm probably going to be playing it for, it'll be the game that I pull up, a few times a month and pop in for about 5 hours or whatever and just, progress and do a bunch of fun stuff in it. And I won't be doing, any of the PvP stuff probably.
Nope. Screw the Dark Zone. Nope.
Because I absolutely hated it in the first game. It was the worst thing ever. Now, as far as this goes, this is a long-term game for me, but it's better than Anthem for sure.
Well, set the bar high, why don't you?
And I mean, like Anthem, you know, was fun in its own right. This is a lot more fun, and it's going to be a lot more fun playing with you guys and playing in you know, groups together. But at the same time, I feel this game is a much more of a slow burn. There's going to be a lot more stuff released. Like, they're probably planning to support this game for multiple years. So it's going to be one of those things where you don't, this isn't a game you have to rush through and go, like, it's not like a Mass Effect where you're like, oh, I'm going to put 100 hours into this game in the next, like, month. This is going to be one of those games where you end up putting, like, 200 hours in, but you end up doing it over the course of 2 years.
Yeah, and like I said at the start, I'm at the max gear score. I haven't really put a build together at this point, but I'm at the max gear score I can get right now. But as of the 5th of April, they're unlocking World Tier 5 for endgame players, which will increase the max level gear that can drop from 450-ish to 500-ish. I say ish because certain activities reward stuff that's a couple levels higher. So I'm 452, even though 450 is as high as you're supposed to be able to get. Once that comes out, then people can start to focus on actually putting proper builds together where they focus all of their gear on crit chance or headshot damage or defensive stuff, even though I've heard there's some bugginess with defensive stats where it's almost not worth it to be a tanky character, which sucks because I like to play tanky characters, but that's neither here nor there. Going forward, there's going to be more content coming out. I'm sure more world tiers will come along, so you'll be able to grind out more stuff and it'll extend the gameplay loop. And there's a lot more to do in this game at the end than you'd expect. There's bounties to do. There's the strongholds.
Public executions.
The entire world basically resets in the right way when you hit the max level. Instead of it being the hyenas and the regular factions you've been fighting at the start, it becomes the Black Tusk, which is a much more advanced enemy faction. They have robots and drones in their arsenal. I was terrified the first time I had to fight an aerial drone. The thing's loud. It's basically this giant robot helicopter flying in the air that's shooting at you constantly. It's terrifying, but it's exciting, and you can take it down if you know how. Their advanced AI, like it refreshes the world and makes it exciting from top to bottom. It's not just, well, I've done it now. I've killed all the strongholds. I've done all the missions. I'm done. No, you get to basically start the real game once you hit the max level.
Yeah, this is a game I'm looking forward to putting a lot more hours into. And this will be my new Destiny. What do I mean by that? This is a game I'll pop in a few times a month, do some activities. This is a game where I put on some music on Spotify and just play, just explore the world, do stuff, do missions, fight random events. And I like that. Like, ultimately, I want a really awesome light machine gun. That's what I'm hoping for right now, because any other gun to me is crap. I'll probably discover that's not true later on. But anyway, overall, I'd say I really, really, really like this game. I'd say this is a 7 to 7.5. out of 10 for me, if I had to put a score to it. What say you, gentlemen?
I'd go 8, 8.5, a little bit higher. I think it's the best looter shooter I've played in years, and probably the best loot game I've played overall in a very long time, since the days of like Diablo 2. It just does so much well. The end game is actually a game. It's not just, hey, you finished leveling, now we're going to slowly trickle out content for the next year. And in a year, you can come back, and it'll be fun, I promise. Okay, Sea of Thieves and Anthem. It's an actual game. It feels complete. It feels like something I can go back and play right now. Like, there's stuff I can be doing right now. I could throw another 12 hours into it over the next weekend, for sure. It's a good game, top to bottom. The leveling experience is fun. I like the music. I like how it looks. There's a couple of problems, but they're mostly bugs, and those are being ironed out as we go. It's just an overall good game.
For Alex, me, what do you say?
It's about a 7.5 to 8. It'll probably be raised to like an 8.5 or 9 once some of the bugs are fixed and some more content comes to it. Like, please God, put flashlights in it. Like, please, please, please. There's no reason for it not to have flashlights. But yeah, I would, it's highly recommended. I think it's going to be probably one of the games that play as a squad together now and then. And you know, kudos to them, because there's been a lot of these style of games coming out lately. But this sort of seems to be the one leading the pack as far as quality goes.
Absolutely.
It's definitely setting a new standard for looter shooters. It's what the genre has needed for a long time.
It's a looter shooter that feels good, feels complete, and it looks like they've got a roadmap of content for the next little bit. But even without that roadmap, this feels like a really good, complete game, and that's not something you can say of a Destiny at launch or Anthem even. And even it only has a 90-day roadmap, so figure that one out. Whereas The Division 2 has a year of stuff coming, and we don't know what's coming yet. So it's going to be an exciting time to be a Division player. I'm looking forward to saving Washington, D.C. And it's a game you should probably check out. And that's our review, our extended look at The Division 2 from Ubisoft.
Our capital is falling. Our leaders are dead or missing.
Dark forces are moving to take control of our nation. And we are the only hope to stop it.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to Twig, where we of course like to bring you the weird, the wacky, the just plain fucked up stuff that happened in the world this week. And we're going to start things off on a happy note. One of my favorite game franchises of all time is The Elder Scrolls. And you may have heard of a YouTuber known as Shirley Curly. She is an 82-year-old grandmother, and she's most well-known for making Skyrim videos, lots of Let's Plays and vlogs. Well, Bethesda at PAX East announced that she will be a character in The Elder Scrolls 6 using a technology which they use to scan real-life objects and turn them into high-res 3D textures. She will be added to the game as a NPC named Grandma Shirley. They haven't revealed what her role is supposed to be in the game just yet. I'm kind of hoping she'll be like... there's a place in Skyrim, specifically, where it's like this hall of werewolves, and they're all these Nord adventurers, and they're tough as shit and everything. So I'm kind of hoping she'll be like the den mother for them, or like the war clan leader, and it's Grandma. I hope she comes back and voices the character. I think that'd be pretty badass if they give her that opportunity. But then again, you don't want to ruin a game with one bad voice acting appearance, because that can happen, because Skyrim reuses a lot of voices. So who's
all they need to do is have her voice the line, "Halt, you have violated the law."
Or, "You never should have come here," or some shit like that. "Someone stole my sweet roll." Exactly. So stuff like that. I think that's really cool of Bethesda to recognize her and say, "Hey, why don't you come out to the studio? Why don't you hang out?" They gave her like a t-shirt and a tour and everything, and they're adding her to the game. That's pretty cool. Now, I know this is not the first time fans have been added to games. I know late last year, I think it was Insomniac Studios added a wedding proposal to Spider-Man, though that didn't turn out so well. But I know World of Warcraft has immortalized people in their game.
Yeah, Stan Lee has an immortalization. That was a hard word for me to find. Robin Williams, I believe, has one. There's a couple more as well, but they escape me at the moment. But they're well known for adding important characters to their games.
Which I just think that's a tremendous thing, and I actually got to think, and if there's any video game franchise I'd want to be immortalized in, it would probably be Mass Effect. And I'd kind of want to be, I want to be a side mission, not a terribly complicated one, but something on the level of Conrad Werner. Something where there's a mission for him in every single game. He's there. You just have to find him. I think that'd be pretty cool. What games would you guys want to be immortalized in?
Diablo 4. Definitely Diablo 4, if that ever happens.
The mobile game?
Not the one on mobile. Not the one on mobile. Never the mobile game. Down with mobile. But no, Diablo 4 would be a good game for me to be immortalized in. A lot of Diablo 4 is about the quests, or not so much Diablo 4. We don't know anything about the game, but Diablo games in total, the story has to do with little things along the side. Diablo 2 especially had a little quest system where there was this the Countess who was off in this one tower and she used to bathe in the blood of virgins. Okay, that's a pretty intense quest, but you never had to do that quest. It's just kind of there in that one act of the game. Diablo 3 changed the formula up a little bit, made it a little bit more linear. So I'd like to see Diablo 4 become more open-ended, go explore, go adventure, and then you could find different NPCs and come across me. Even if I'm partially disemboweled by some demon, I don't care. Just put me in there somewhere.
Come on, Blizzard.
I'd want to be something in Dragon Age, or if I was going to go the Mass Effect route, I'd want to be a Hanar.
Stupid jellyfish. That'd be pretty cool. So BioWare and Blizzard, if you're listening, come on, man. Just come shout on, us Mark out Beard. Somewhere. Yeah, come on, Mark. Throw us a bone here. My next weird story, this one, it's strange, and I love it so much. So evidently for the last 35 years in France, Garfield phones have been washing up on shore for the last 35 years. Nobody knows why. Well, that mystery has Mondays. Recently been solved. Yeah. Speaking of cats, Wiley just jumped on my head. Hi, can I help you? Okay, good cat.
Love lasagna.
The environmental group Arvilisalu, I'm pretty sure I butchered that, found the remains of... Arvilisalu have found the remains of a shipping container along with scattered orange parts near a sea cave in the Brittany region of western France. Basically, the activists were tipped off by a farmer who said he and his brother saw phones featuring the comic strip cat wash up during a storm in the early 80s. The siblings found the container in a coastal area of... I can't pronounce this.
I'm not sure on this one.
Finisterre. Yeah, Finisterre, only accessible during low tide. So evidently the Facebook page for the local marine park said the container was lost in 1983 and bits and pieces of the novelty phones have been washed up on shore almost daily for years. And Wiley, can you please get off my table?
Just imagine just going to the beach and just seeing Garfield just everywhere.
It's so weird too.
Bits of Garfield littering the shores as you're on the beach. I think it'd be a little creepy at times.
Just going for a swim and there's Garfield just floating past you. It's so weird too, because I'm looking at some of the photos. The phones are in remarkably good shape, some of them. I mean, sure, some of them are like kind of sun bleached, but that's about the worst damage that they have them. They're still identifiable as Garfield. Almost all their parts are there. It's just what it's so weird.
Is what I'm assuming due to the weathering from water damage and the sun and everything else, the pupils of Garfield's eyes is just gone. So they're completely white. It's terrifying. Evil Garfield.
It makes me wonder, is there like an island where all the football phones have been washing up on shore for the last 40 years?
Guarantee
that's how they name islands.
It's going to be something really weird, like someday, like Easter Island with their giant sea turtles on like the Galapagos or something. There'll be randomly football phones and something else weird will show up there. You watch.
It does bring to light the pollution problem in the ocean, though. Like, this was probably more of an accident than it was actually dumping into the ocean, but there's a lot of plastic out there. So, like, fuck, man, we suck as a race. Like, all humans are just terrible people.
We do, considering there's that giant garbage island, which I think they said is like the size of like Rhode Island or something. Or something ridiculous like that.
No, that's just Rhode Island.
We apologize to our listeners in Rhode Island. Which I'm sure there are.
I don't actually have an opinion on Rhode Island.
It kind of makes me think of that bit from Wade's World, like, and then you can magically get transported to Delaware. Hi. I'm in Delaware. Can you? What is something interesting about fucking Rhode Island? Somebody tell me. On Twitter, at Birdman Daughter, at This Week in Geek, give me a random factoid.
Watch don't say home. Family Guy.
That's. Where the fuck is Quahog? Is that Rhode Island? Quahog,
Rhode Island. Yep.
Okay, well, fuck you, Peter
Griffin. On the road to Rhode Island.
And for our last story this week, this one is, it's a feel-good story, but a utility worker was suspended from his job this week after showing he was rescuing a cat that got stuck on top of a telephone pole in Philadelphia. He used the company's Verizon bucket truck to rescue the cat, who was named Princess Mama, from the top of this pole. Now, Verizon unfortunately had to suspend the guy for 3 weeks, quote unquote. So this guy, gonna look for his name here. Maurice German got suspended for 3 weeks from his job. And Verizon has said, "We take no joy when our employees face consequences related to their job duties. We are, however, fully committed and responsible for keeping our employees and customers safe. For safety reasons, our trucks and related equipment are not intended to be used in the area in which he was operating, specifically around electrical wires. While our actions may not be popular, he potentially put his life and those around him in jeopardy." Now, someone who actually caught the cat rescue on video set up a GoFundMe for him, as being suspended for 3 weeks without pay is kind of shit. So the GoFundMe has raised, as of right now, $3,395, with an original goal of $2,400 raised by 149 people in 9 days. So that's not bad. So this woman, Amanda Boyce, said, "He is suspended for 3 weeks, and I wanted to compensate for his suspension too, so his family would not suffer." That's pretty cool. Now, Verizon decided to do something nice, even though they had to suspend the guy. They actually made a donation to the Pennsylvania SPCA in Fishtown, which provides help and care for animals and abandoned cats, etc., etc. The reason I picked this story is I was actually listening to WMMR, which is a station out of Philly that I listen to a fair chunk. And because you always hear about people rescuing cats out of trees. I just never thought a phone company would rescue a cat. And stunned silence fills the room. Oh, Princess Mama!
So, I don't know. From the company's point of view, I can kind of understand what it is they're doing. Like, you have to consider health and safety as a major thing. Even, like, yes, he did something that he felt was the right thing to do, but he did endanger himself and everyone in the area by getting that close to power lines and equipment that's not meant to be used for that. And those are the reasons those regulations and those rules exist, is to protect the worker, to protect the people that are in the area. And going against those, even for the right reason, is still the wrong thing to do from that point of view. And you have to follow the rules. You have to follow the punishments that go with violating that rule.
3 weeks seems a little excessive. Maybe two.
It's probably
I was thinking the same thing. I thought maybe it would be like you're suspended for a week. But like 3 weeks is basically a paycheck and a half.
It may have been a suspension that was the duration of the investigation around the incident. And those investigations can take some time because you have to get people in from ministries and such. Maybe not necessarily the ministry, because we're talking about the states here. But
you know what I'm thinking, actually? It could be a union thing where... like normally the union's there to protect you, but if they have certain safety standards in place, it could have been something where he was suspended because the union says, you know, it's exact this amount of time or something.
Yeah, it's been standardized. It's not, they said, okay, well, you did wrong, so we're going to suspend you for a proportionate amount of time. No, it's okay. You violated this law or this policy, therefore this needs to happen.
Exactly. So either way, we're happy Princess Mama has been rescued. I think she's back with her original owners now. And at least Verizon did something good and made a donation to the local SPCA. So anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of the weird news. And we're going to follow up with our last Satan's Pantry on the Elder Scrolls official cookbook. This is where we take a look at the cookbook itself and an alcoholic drink known as skooma. So we'll be back right after this. And my review from Paramount Home Entertainment of Pet Sematary. We'll be back, guys, right after these messages.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
I used to be an adventurer like you. Then I took an arrow in the knee.
Oh, yes! Yes, the kindly stranger.
I've been waiting for you to return to consummate our love.
Let me guess. Someone stole your sweet roll.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, only on Twig, your source for stupidity and beyond. And as you guys know, over the last little while, we have been taking a look at the official Elder Scrolls cookbook, The Tastes of Tamriel, we have been enjoying here on the show over the last few weeks. I'm joined with my compatriots, Mr. Christopher and Alex, and this shall be one of our final reviews from the cookbook. We're actually going to give you our final impressions of the cookbook today, but for today's specialty, we're going to try something that is known to Elder Scrolls lore to from like the beginning games to the most recent game, Skyrim, and presumably Elder Scrolls 6, whenever that comes out, because Bethesda, you need a hit, and boy, you need it soon. We're going to be trying the drink skooma, and I'm going to read you the official passage from the book. Because skooma is so highly sought after, yet so illegal, some enterprising innkeepers across Tamriel have cooked up their own version of a cordial, I think that's how you pronounce it, that mimics the addictively sweet drink so beloved by the Khajiit, which are the cat people. So what this is vodka that takes 2 to 3 weeks to ferment. It's also made with dried apricots and a simple syrup, more or less. So, if you take a look at my Twitter, which is @birdmandot, I've taken a few pictures of this, or I'm going to be taking a picture of how we prepared this. We made our skooma in a mason jar, and we see giant apricots that are vodka infused.
They're no longer dehydrated. They've been rehydrated with pure alcohol.
Before you showed me what it was, my thought was, this looks like a spittoon.
Yeah, this is supposed to be a narcotic in the world of Skyrim that the cat people really like, made with moon sugar.
See, I always thought it was something that you smoked or imbibed in another way.
Yeah, like you, I think in the lore, it's supposed to be cut with nightshade and you could smoke it and you could see visions and shit.
Okay, I understand a cookbook not wanting to smoke anything.
So we are going to try skooma here. I'm drinking right out of the mason jar.
No, wait, let's take a whiff first and describe it.
You really smell the apricot.
You can really smell the vodka.
It smells like perfume. Now, wait, so you made this yourself, right? So
yes.
It's homemade booze.
Yep, homemade booze.
So your wife isn't going to kill us, right?
No. Well, in fact, she's the brewer of this.
So she got the ratios and everything correct, so we're not going to die.
Yeah, well.
Well, you don't make the alcohol from scratch. You add vodka, alcohol to a concoction.
I was going to say, this isn't moonshine.
No, this is more, you take an alcohol and you add your own flavoring to it.
Yeah. One of the things I'm going to do with the cookbook, once we review the skooma, I'm going to tell you about some of the other recipes that are in here, such as Nord Mead, which I'm tempted to brew up a batch for us for Christmas, and I'll get us all Viking drinking flagons, and we'll have that for Christmas.
Takes a very long time to make that stuff, but Six months.
Which means we have to start, like, next week.
Fair enough.
So, oh boy, boys.
Without further ado, let's get drunk on microphone.
Down the hatch.
It is strong.
Oh, I'm breathing fire.
Oh, man, that's good.
That is very strong.
It's sweet.
It's very sweet, but I don't even taste the apricot, really.
I taste the apricot more than I thought. Now, Tristan is going to be a brave soul and eat one of the apricots.
Yes, I'm going to eat one of these apricots. It's going to be very
something.
Well.
Was that a mistake or a good mistake?
It doesn't taste like much. It's got a weird texture because it's rehydrated, dehydrated apricot.
Are you going to need help walking out of here?
Yes.
Yeah, because how we're doing this is we gave Tristan a coffee cup full of the skooma.
To make a comparison, I had maybe a single shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many did you figure this is, Alex?
Do not drink that all, Mike. I'm dead serious. If you drink that all, we're going to see you in the newspaper. Local birdman taken to hospital from drinking homemade booze.
My so wife just yelled
warned,
at me.
Warned not to actually do that, which is good advice. I'm going to advocate against actually eating the apricots. They have a horrible texture. It's kind of slimy, and the whole way just kind of tastes like that alcoholic burn.
But they really infuse the drink, you can tell, with it.
So that is a very strong flavor. I can tell that I'm going to feel this in a couple minutes.
Wow, okay.
Overall, I think I mean, like it, though. I think I like it.
It's not something you'd have all the time, for sure.
No, it's definitely an interesting novelty beverage. You should stop bringing that now.
Yeah, oh, wow.
If you're doing, like, a medieval theme.
Yeah, this would be great. If you had a role play group and you were playing Skyrim either using Fate or D&D, this would be great to have around the table. And whenever you have a critical hit or failure, take a shot of Skooma. Oh, wow. I think I've had a lot.
Yeah, you've had too much. You're cut off. So essentially, I think I like the flavor, but only as a novelty beverage. I would not regularly drink this. Despite the part where it takes several weeks to brew in the first place, so there's a lot of effort that goes into actually making this stuff.
Although I think if you took like a masking tape and wrote on it, like, was it Skooma?
Yeah.
And left it on the top shelf of your cabinets, whenever somebody would walk by, they'd think, what the hell has he got up there?
Khajiit's wares, if you have coin. Oh, boy. So, Skooma, I'm going to say for me, it's a win. This is a great shot-type drink.
Very sweet.
Very sweet, though. This is going to spike my sugar something nice, because I'm diabetic. But overall, I really like it.
Like I said, I like it, but only as a novelty and maybe only as a single shot. I wouldn't have more than one of these at a time.
I can recommend it again if you're doing a theme thing where you're going to make like a full main course meal from the book and you're having a party. That's, you know, it would be something like Game of Thrones is coming back, right? It'd be the kind of thing where you could theme it, make yourself some Game of Thrones dinner and have a little shot of this. And then, you know, make sure you have a designated person just to pick you up off the floor if you drink too much.
My upper lip feels funny now.
I may have had a lot more than I thought I did. So to talk about the cookbook itself before I get too inebriated. So the cookbook comes from Inside Editions, as we've talked about over the last few weeks, written by Chelsea Monroe Casile. This is a wonderful cookbook. I mean, I find this more accessible than, say, the Fallout 76 cookbook in terms of the ease of the recipes. I mean, on the show, we've had salt rice porridge, sweet rolls. We have done a special hidden recipe, which will come out in probably a few weeks. We also did leek and cheese crostata, which is kind of like a hearty tart, which was on the show last week. But overall, I think you're getting a very, very good bang for your buck. This book retails for between $30 and $35 on Amazon.ca, I think.
Well, and it's a lot of unique recipes. It's not something you see every day. Like, a lot of cookbooks are basically the same thing where they'll throw like one different ingredient.
Yeah, here these are all your recipes pork dishes
that you don't normally see in any other cookbook.
Yeah, like one of the weirder ones I saw is one I really wanted to try on the show, but unfortunately it was embargoed. There's a recipe called Horker Loaf, and a Horker in the world of Skyrim, it's kind of like a walrus, and I think it called for clams and some kind of a fish. It was very fishy, but I was very, very curious to try it. There's a Awesomer venison. Awesomer, I think, are orcs in this world. But it does give you a lot of lore with each of the recipes. There's at least a paragraph in Chains. The opening of the book tells you about the different races. They tell you how to make different spices, like here's Nord spice, Imperial spice, and Imperial mushroom sauce, stuff like that. So it's definitely written with a love of the source material. And with that in mind, I have to highly recommend this. Big thanks to our folks over at Inside Edition. Eric, I could not have done this without you. Thank you so much. So coming up next on Satan's Pantry, we're going to be taking a look at another Inside Edition's cookbook for the next couple weeks, and that's going to be WWE's official cookbook. So we might have stuff like Nacho Man Randy Savage, Coffee Kingston, Rick Woo Pies. We're going to have some real fun over the next few weeks, and then we got some other stuff coming up on the show as one of our big fans, Jen, has sent us in stuff like Vegemite. She sent us these really weird garlic candies, I want to say, and stuff that we will be getting to later on this season. So we will be back right here on This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, your flagship of stupidity. I think I'm drunk.
My pen is mightier than swords, it's the right choice. They call me MF Doom and I use my voice. With each rap my speech craft keeps stacking. If you could see the graph you'd actually be laughing. You'll never sound as fresh, I'm a rock star. I climb the 7,000 steps to high Hrothgar.
We are looking at Pet Sematary from Paramount Home Entertainment on Blu-ray. Well, the new remake is going to be coming out very, very shortly. And of course, what better time to cash in than by re-releasing the original movie that came out in the late 80s. And Pet Sematary is one of my favorite Stephen King stories of all time, simply because I'm an animal lover, but I'm also a big believer in, well, sometimes dead is better. And well, this follows the story of the Creed family dealing with the loss of their beloved cat, Church, when they decide to bury it in an ancient Mi'kmaq Indian burial ground. Good ideas all around. And of course, the father of the family gets some ideas when his little son Gage is killed by a truck on the busy road outside of their house and decides, well, it worked on the cat. Maybe it'll work on my son. And of course, hilarity ensues. Of course, it's Stephen King, so horror, scary, bad, ghosts, zombies, bad things happen. And a creepy little kid who, oddly enough, was the same little kid from Kindergarten Cop, I believe, and Wes Craven's A New Nightmare, I found out recently. So, good for that kid. Anyway, though, the Blu-ray itself looks fantastic. This is a new remaster of the original, and it looks like it was shot yesterday. The colors really pop. It looks extremely bright, vivid, and just one of the best transfers I've seen in a really long time. In fact, whoever's working on a lot of the Paramount stuff, whenever they do a remaster of a movie, it looks amazing. And this is probably one of the best ones they've put out in a really long time. They do have all the archival special features that have been on previous releases. There's also some new ones. There's one called Fear and Remembrance. A new interview with Mary Lambert, which is the director who I think did a really big Madonna music video back in the day. She's done some other stuff since then, of course. Some behind-the-scenes stuff. And one where they talk about the horror of setting it in such a small town. How that kind of leads up to the scariness, stuff like that. How rural areas can be just as scary as Gothic Transylvania sort of thing. And overall, I think this is a really good time to pick this movie up. If you've never seen Pet Sematary, I showed this to Blair a little while ago, and she loved it. And that's something that I think is a very good barometer, is that if you can get someone who's not a huge horror fan to like a movie like this, then I think that's a good sign that it's going to hold up if it gets a non-genre fan interested. So Pet Sematary from Paramount Home Entertainment is definitely worth adding to your collection, and definitely check out the remake in theaters coming up very shortly. And that's the kind of show it has been here on Twig, your flagship, rather, of stupidity. Thank you for joining us for this really long episode this week. Especially big thanks to Ubisoft for providing us for the codes for the Division 2. Big thanks to Eric over at Inside Editions for the Elder Scrolls The Official Cookbook. Something you should probably pick up. I'm probably still a little drunk off the skooma, to be honest with you. Also, holy Warner crap. Brothers. Yeah, you took that home. I wasn't allowed to drink the rest of it.
Yeah, that stuff was strong.
But a good time was had. Also, a big thanks to Paramount Home Entertainment and Warner Brothers Home Entertainment for The Crimes of Grindelwald, as well as Pet Sematary. So, coming up on the site this week, I will be on Nerds of the Third Power this week. I will be talking, I think, Cyberpunk as of tomorrow when we record the show, or today when this episode is posted, because we didn't do April Fools this year, because I think that holiday is almost universally fucking stupid. And I say that from personal experience as a news guy. Looking for news stories on April 1st is asking for trouble. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I'm good. Anyway. Also, looks like me and Alex will be on Mayhem Mics after WrestleMania next week. So look forward to that as we make our long-awaited return. And what has WWE done now? we'll wait and see as SmackDown moves to Fox for another 3 fucking hours. She can't get enough of those promos. Anyway, let's see. We will be recording Cambridge this weekend because the stars have aligned and Cthulhu himself has demanded that I roll dem bones. So we'll be working on that as we work feverishly to get ready for the summer season of Terrible Warriors to get stuff out. So rest assured, chummers, stuff is coming down the pipeline. And what else we got, Alex? You got a turd of treasure coming out, don't you?
Yeah, I've got about 9 or 10 things in my backlog of stuff to release reviews for. Just the illness of the last couple of weeks has been taking its toll on me, and every time I go to record, I either cough or lose my voice. So this is actually the first day where I've been able to be somewhat normal.
Well, good. We're definitely glad to have you back on the show. Things that I'm working on is I have a Rise of the TMNT DVD to take a look at from the new Nickelodeon series, which premiered, I want to say, earlier this year. I'm also taking a look at some other RPGs from R. Talsorian, Castle Falkenstein and Mech Tunnel. I'll be looking at those in the next little bit. And Modifius was very generous and sent me a copy of Fallout Wasteland Warfare ahead of the RPG supplement, which will be coming out at some point this summer for the miniatures war game itself. So we'll take a look at that over the next few weeks here on the show. Tristan, you got anything cooking up on your end? What are you working on review-wise?
Well, I just put out the... I finished my reviews for Book of Unwritten Tales at long last and Unit 4, a little platformer, very difficult game. I am currently working on Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, which is kicking the absolute crap out of me. It's very hard, but very fun. So that's going to be coming up in the near future. That's about all I have going on right now. It's kind of a full attention sort of game. It's not something I can divide up too much, so that'll be me. Of course, at the same time, I've got more Division 2 to play coming up at least on Friday.
It'll be a good time. So anyway, guys, we thank you for your patronage here on the show. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. You can reach me on Twitter at BirdmanDodd at thisweekingeek, and your guys' Twitters are
at Mr. Tristopher,
at DeathPhase Twig.
And I should also be doing Future Imperfect with Steve Megatron Phillips. And I should also be doing Altered Geek with him. So you can always keep a look on the Geekcast Radio Network site or thisweekingeek.net for more show stuff. So until next time, we have been
Mr. Christopher
and Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying be cool, be kind, be careful. And as always, live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next week right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Well, that's our show.
All right. Here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.